The very public spat over criminal justice reform efforts in Massachusetts has suddenly gone quiet. Governor Charlie Baker and Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins were scheduled to meet today after a weekend of contentious remarks over Rollins' criminal justice reform efforts. But now both of their offices are refusing to comment on the spat or even if they met today. So just to recap, late last week, the governor's public safety secretary, Thomas Turco, took aim at Rollins' policies that discourage prosecutors for some low-level criminal offenses. Turco said Rollins' policies will substantially restrict government's ability to protect victims. Rollins then held a press briefing on Friday and repeated her campaign pledge not to prosecute some 15 lower-level crimes.
What I'm doing is working on mass incarceration. Overwhelmingly, this list of 15, they're not violent crimes, and they are clogging people up in the criminal justice system.
Rollins also brought up the governor's son, AJ, who was accused of groping a woman on an airplane last year.
Not everyone gets the benefit of the Baker family when they have interacted with the criminal justice system. Most moms that are living in Suffolk County don't have a $1,000 lawyer to handle a charge when it's brought against their son or daughter or loved one.
Both the governor and Rollins then said they spoke over the weekend. Governor Baker said he called Rollins Saturday.
And we basically just talked about public safety and working together. And I think it was a very constructive and helpful conversation. And I think we're going to try and hit the reset button and start again on Monday.
And at a community rally on Sunday, Rollins agreed.
We had a conversation, which is nobody's business but ours. And now we are moving forward to help the communities
yes.
that are impacted by the criminal justice system.
Yes.
But at that same rally, Rollins went on to say that there is an atmosphere of misogyny, and no governor has weighed in when prosecutors outline policies that increase incarceration. So, where are we? Well, listeners, we want to hear from you on this. Are these new proposals from Suffolk DA Rachel Rollins too radical? Will they improve public safety? Will they compromise public safety? Is criminal justice reform sorely needed? Or do you think we have an arbitrary criminal justice system that favors the wealthy and the powerful and is not about justice at all? Join the conversation by calling 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So the first person we're going to talk to about this is Kevin Burke. He's a former state public safety secretary and former district attorney of Essex County. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mr. Burke.
Thank you.
So what's your reaction to what's happening here?
Well, I think the whole thing is unfortunate that it played out in the public at all. I certainly agree with D.A. Rollins that the secretary of public safety position, as you noted, I held, there's really no business getting into policy matters of a district attorney's office. I can't understand why that was allowed to happen. There's no jurisdictional control in that regard. And certainly, if you are weighing in on a political basis, that should go through the governor's office. So, and then I think the DA's response, and I think you can read into her most recent response, was unfortunate when she brought up a personal matter relating to the governor. These kinds of policy discussions, and I think that's what they are, should be conducted in the way they've most recently been conducted between the governor and the district attorney.
So are you suggesting then that Secretary Turco wrote this letter and did not properly consult with the governor's office?
No, I don't know what happened. Mm. I can only tell you it's extraordinary and I can't think of instances where secretaries get involved in district attorneys' policies. And it's also extraordinary that a secretary would make such a public pronouncement or send such a letter without clearing it from the governor's office. So with the governor's office. So it might have been one of those extraordinary reactions on Secretary Turco's part. He felt strongly and wrote a letter. I don't know, but it shouldn't happen that way.
You know, District Attorney Rollins also said that this letter was out of line, but she brought up other things that are happening under Secretary Turco, and we have a bit of her tape. Let's listen.
I encourage you to write to your governor and your secretary.
That's right.
And when you speak to Secretary Turco, who's responsible for the Department of Corrections, remind him that MCI Norfolk has water that makes Flint water look like Avion water.
So I'm wondering, Kevin Burke, do you think there will be a lot of continuing fallout over this when she says something like this? Look, we have a lot of problems in our Department of Correction and other areas of which Secretary Turco is responsible. You know, is this going to continue?
I don't think it's going to continue. Again, I look at most recent events, and it suggests that everybody understands they got, to use a common phrase now, a little over their skis, and policy discussions can be held through matters of legislation and discussion of legislation and meetings with appropriate people. And there are certain silos, alleyways, that you have to stick in, and public prosecution, a district attorney's office, falls really outside Secretary of Public Service, Secretary of Public Safety's realm. So I think it should probably stay in that area.
You know, all of this started over the policy proposals that Rollins outlined just last week. She outlined a 65-page plan that really elaborated on some of her campaign promises of how she would not prosecute lower-level crimes and she would seek diversion as opposed to incarceration. And some of the data in those policy proposals suggests that of the top 25 charges filed by the Suffolk County DA's office, 17 of those 25 offenses are nonviolent and are clogging up the courts. So if that's what she's trying to accomplish here, to sort of clear the way in the courts for more serious crimes, is this the way to go about it? Do you agree with these proposals?
I agree with the general philosophy that we have to make sure that we don't have a system, court system clogged with cases that can be handled other than through the process of going before a judge or a jury. I think that's been a sentiment that exists with DAs for a long period of time. I think that her approach, general approach and philosophy, is a solid one. It probably will take some tweaking. There's some nuance to it. Again, what she appears to be, and I have not read the memo, she appears to be talking about, again, low-level offenses, offenses that go through a district, very busy district court, you know, sort of the marketplace of justice where most criminal justice occurs, and it's a time where you want to handle the most serious cases that appear in a district court in the best manner possible. And you can do that with by dealing with, as district attorneys in other places have dealt with, cases of like shoplifting through a diversion program. I think that makes sense. I think what she's saying as a general philosophy makes sense. There may be, and I'm certain there will be nuances to that. Even in simple drug possession cases, there may be a situation where you want to apply the power of the court, even outside diversion, in order that somebody gets treatment. You may even families come in and ask that somehow a person be held by continuing generally or do something with a case that doesn't immediately go to sort of a non-prosecution status. And I'm sure that's what's happening within the district courts.
Do you think that's happening now?
I do. Oh, I absolutely think it's happening now. I think that low-level crimes often go to diversion programs where they exist. I also think that people understand. I think fundamentally, by the way, we shouldn't be confused. We're talking about cases that generally don't almost always result in a penalty other than jail time. So those kinds of cases aren't generally contributing to overcrowded jails and houses, correct?
Well, we could argue that a lot. I mean, there are a lot of statistics that suggest that many folks are incarcerated right now because of probation and parole violations, which are not necessarily violent
again,
crimes.
I don't want to confuse those. Those are different issues.
Yeah.
It could be, and again, I'm talking about just direct, so whatever the term or the ultimate disposition of a case, in both, I think there's a good discussion to be made regarding, and something that I think prosecutors have looked at for a long time, and for that matter, probation violations have to be looked at carefully. They shouldn't be allowed to clog the jails or and take up space and basically that's where overcrowding is occurring now, is in jails and houses of corrections. DOC's population has been reduced. But again, with those low-level crimes, it's the kind of even a probation violation where you miss a meeting isn't a result that causes a violation resulting in incarceration.
So would you? So I know you said you. I hate to interrupt, but we're limited for time here. I know you said you haven't read her memo and you support her philosophy. Does it mean that you support the idea that at least most of these minor charges like trespassing, shoplifting, disorderly conduct, receiving stolen property, drug possession, those should not be prosecuted?
No. What I think is there has to be a recognition of is that lower-level offenses can often be treated through things like diversion. I also think that, and I assume it's all in the implementation of this policy, there will be cases such as receiving stolen property, which require some level of discretion on the part of a district attorney's office or an assistant DA to recommend prosecution for a lot of different reasons. So there has to be some discretion left in the system. An automatic decision not to prosecute wouldn't be in the public interest. A philosophy, a position that it is preferred that we not prosecute makes some sense, but there has to be discretion left to deal with some of even what appear to be less serious crimes in a manner that allows for the nuanced analysis, type of offender, type of crime, those kinds of things, where there's a discussion with all the players in the system, prosecutor, police, probation department, that this is can be a case where it's an exception to the policy.
Okay, I want to bring in another voice here. On the line is Massachusetts Senator Jamie Eldridge. He's chair of the Joint Committee on the Judiciary. State Senator Eldridge, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Deborah. Thanks so much for having me on.
So what do you make of what's going on here between District Attorney Rollins and Governor Baker?
Yes, I was quite surprised that Governor Baker, through his public safety secretary, would send a letter to District Attorney Rollins, you know, first along the lines of what Kevin just said is just that it's outside the scope of a
Okay, I'm sorry, Senator Eldridge, but I think we're losing you. Let's try one more time. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Barely.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I think we'll come back to you in a bit. I want to make sure we get some callers on the air and remind callers to join this conversation. We're talking about criminal justice reform efforts in this spat between Governor Baker and Suffolk District Attorney Rachel Rollins. They are arguing over what started with a letter from the governor's public safety secretary, Tom Turco, criticizing some of the policies from Rollins that she would not prosecute low-level crimes. Ivan is calling from Waltham. Ivan, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Listen, I don't understand exactly who's got jurisdiction, but I see it from a justice perspective, and it just seems that the racial aspect subconsciously plays into it. So what happens is we're spending a ton of money incarcerating people, creating the school-to-pipeline, the school-to-prison pipeline, and then it affects your whole life. You got a record. There are no more opportunities. There's no redemption. I'm tired of paying taxes for people to be in jail when they should be educated. The rest of the world is moving towards fair, at least the developed countries, towards a kinder system. And yet we seem to be beholden by the unions, by the people that want to punish. Why can black minority people get the same relaxed attitude like we're giving the opioid users who allowed them to be white? Sorry about the racial aspect that's playing to this.
All right, Ivan, thanks so much for the call. Brian is calling from Salem. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay, how you doing?
Good. I'd just like to say that it's honestly disgraceful the way that Commissioner Turco has turned a blind eye not only to the horrific conditions inside mass prisons, including undrinkable water, but also the way that he's doing attacking DA Rollins at a time where it's obvious that he's doing it to defend the honor of the man who appointed him. Now that she's gone after the different treatment between average so-called criminals and his rapey, gropey son. Thank you.
All right. Well, Brian, that was enough of Brian. So far we've got two folks in support of Rollins and who question whether Secretary Turco should be writing the letter that he did to her about her criminal justice reform policies. Listeners, if you have a comment or would like to join the conversation, the number is 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Reverend Mariama White-Hammond is with us. She's on the line. She's a pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Reverend Mariama, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you.
So what do you make of this dispute between the governor and Suffolk D.A. Rollins?
Well, I mean, I think, as others have said, the first problem is the process has been inappropriate. I think, if Secretary Turco had concerns, you pick up the phone, you ask somebody to sit down, you read it through, and you clarify the areas where you disagree. But as a voter in Suffolk County, I'm really clear that we elected Rachel Rollins to do exactly what she's doing. Those of us who participate in this process did so because we see both sides of this. I live in a neighborhood. I've grown up. I grew up in the 90s in the city. I understand that violent crime is an issue, and I want a focus on violent crime. I want to focus on the kinds of things that have made our communities unlivable in some instances. And what I think a lot of us who supported her recognizes, and I can say this personally as someone who used to run a youth program, you have young people that make a mistake. I went to a fancy rich private school. I saw many young women there who made mistakes, and their families were always able to shelter them from the mistakes with the intention and the belief that, yes, they've made a mistake, but if we can get them through this hump of their teenage years, you know, their college years, they will go on to be productive citizens. That same benefit of the doubt is not extended to our young people and many folks in our community. And so I think my understanding, and I haven't been privy to the 65-page memo yet, but I've heard D.A. Rollins talk about this, is the goal is to figure out which crimes are sending people into our system and sometimes making them come out criminals that they weren't when they went in. Mm-hmm. I saw this directly. Young people who, I'm not going to deny, some of them had issues. Some of them had issues that needed to be addressed. Some of them needed to be in therapy. Probably some of them needed to be in programs that would take them. But they would come. They would end up getting locked up, and by the time they came out, that young person was in a worse position than they were when they went in.
I just want to ask you something, because we spoke earlier today with Reverend Eugene Rivers of the Azusa Christian Community in Dorchester, and he's a member of the Youth Violence Reduction Task Force. And you know, he talked about this dispute between the governor and Rachel Rollins, and he said, he thinks that it's really gone down the wrong road. Let's listen.
I think that there is a way of communicating when you're at her level with the governor that doesn't need to be dragging in stuff about the man's family. Governor Baker is a eminently reasonable individual, and we should keep the discourse as civil and non-ad hominem as possible, because the public spat was not necessary, and it's too easy for that stuff to be polarizing, and it distracts from the conversation.
Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, does he have a point?
Oh yeah, I think that the conversation does distract, but I think if we want to talk about leadership on that, it could have started from the governor's office, including his secretary. If you want to have honest, good dialogue, you don't put out memos and not talk to people directly. You call people up and you say, can we sit down? So, you know, am I excited about her referencing the governor's son? Probably not a decision I would have made. But I also recognize to focus on that without recognizing that it began with a decidedly public shaming on behalf of the secretary and then a weighing in by the governor that sort of took us down this path. So I don't want to, I'm not encouraging the family piece, but I also think it got started public in a way that doesn't reflect being reasonable and wanting to dialogue.
I want to take another call here. Paul is calling from Bridgewater. Paul, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I disagree with Rollins' approach. And did she think to the effect it's going to have on all the small businesses throughout the city that will basically be destroyed if people think it's perfectly all right to go in and shoplift and steal.
Okay.
How can they stay in business if everything is taken from them?
Okay. Interesting question. And I'm wondering, Mariam, I don't want to put you in a position of defending Rollins' policies, but I wonder, when you hear from folks who are concerned that some of her policies could result in lawlessness, I know that there's an intent to reduce mass incarceration, but how do you ensure that you increase the folks who are abiding by the laws? How do you strike that balance, do you think?
Not prosecuting doesn't mean not holding people accountable at all. Mm-hmm. There are diversion programs. I, as a former youth worker, we would enter agreements. When our young people got off track, they would enter agreements around community service. Sometimes I had to say, this is the program that I'm going to provide for them so that they get back on track. Sometimes you can make a decision that people need therapy. There's all sorts of things you can do, right? So saying that you're going to put people towards diversion does not mean that you're going to say, oh, you shoplifted, just don't do it again. See you later. It will mean creating a more robust structure that says, how do we recognize when somebody has a problem and we can sort of move them in a different direction? If a person continues to do the same crime, and that's one of the things I think has been lost in this, it doesn't say that if a person has shoplifted 52 times, every one of those times, you're going to let them go. What it says is the default would be not to do that. And that's particularly, I think, a good place if it's a first-time offense. Now, if you're talking a seventh-time offense, a tenth, we're having a totally different conversation. And my expectation is that her office would take that into account. But at the end of the day, the question is, depending on what a person has done, do we have other means at our disposal to hold them accountable rather than sending them to jail, which I can say from first-hand experience, I have seen young people and older people come out of the prison system worse off than they were when they went in. So
right.
If there's another option, let's think about it.
Okay, Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester, thanks so much for being with us. I'm sure we'll be talking about this again.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Burke, former Massachusetts Public Safety Secretary, thanks to you as well. And I'm sorry we lost Jamie Eldridge. Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Thank you.